Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America on a Wednesday. J.C. Cole checking in, but now I understand that he's been out on the speaking tour this week. What are you got going on, J.C.?
Well, kind of a remnant of the ending of the, Arise America tour.
Arise USA, to be exact.
Well, I like America better than USA. But
Arise just because USA. You're the American Chamber of Commerce.
There we go. Right. David Steele came through New Jersey in August, and he spoke to a group called Stand Up New Jersey. And so I went up to visit, and he asked me to speak also. So we both spoke, and we both caught COVID, and that's history. Anyway, so I spoke to that group again, the one down in Princeton, New Jersey, yesterday on, what I see is happening.
Who died in the Battle of Princeton on this day in 1771?
Actually we froze to death because it's 15, it's 15 degrees here. I feel like we should, rename our state like Fargo.
Hugh Mercer is the answer to the question that you're avoiding because you always put me on the spot about that Battle of Princeton. Hugh Mercer dies from wounds received in the Battle of Princeton on this day in 1777. Finally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Finally, I got something you don't know.
Right. Mercer County is named after him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a lot around Princeton named Mercer.
So,
I think was he a colonel or a general?
That's not in my footnotes.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
you're going beyond. You want to talk about Martin Van Buren? I can go into great dank detail, but not Hugh Mercer. Okay. All right. So, Stand Up New Jersey. I had what's the guy's name on there? Great guy. I met him at Keystone on the 4th of July. He came out and then contacted me.
Don
joined me on Trent on the Loose. Man, that guy's got some energy. I love what he's got going on. What are they accomplishing? They've been hitting school boards hard, right?
Yes, but also Don and his wife, Donna, are putting together an aquaponics system up at their newly acquired, what's called a ranch. In New Jersey, we don't use those words, but yeah, more a farm. But yeah,
by the way, there's no rightful ranch in Nebraska with aquaponics.
Right. We're going to get you cowboys to start eating quiche. Right. Boy, that goes back to the 80s.
Yeah. Anyway, right. Don does a great job. He told me about the what he was doing with food there when we talked.
Right. So I don't know when he'll get the aquaponics up and running, but I went and I did look at the system, and it's a pretty decent system.
On my across the pond this morning, which was really discombobulated, but I had written the title up because I thought we would talk about, do you have your seeds for planting your garden in 2022? Because I think that'll be pretty handy. We ultimately didn't even get to that because we came in late, and then Andrew had some really good information that came out of Washington, D.C. yesterday. But all of that leads me into saying that it would be a good time to have your seeds ready to plant.
Absolutely. And that's another concern with things like the supply chain, because I tried to buy seed potatoes from the seed potato, companies. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we have them in storage until it's time to, unwrap them and send them out. So you can't buy seed potatoes, until it's right before the planting season. Well, what happens if the supply chain breaks before the planting season?
Why would they restrict you from buying them now?
I think it was just kind of the workings of the company that they're they don't sell many during the off season, so you know it's a bit of a disruption for them to go and get in the 50 pounds or 100 pounds to send out, you know. So I ended up just going to Restaurant Depot and buying a few hundred pounds of potatoes and hope that they weren't sprayed with the chemical to reduce the growth of the eyes.
So last year, we got to work in your chickens. You know, there's an outfit in Iowa that has been very dominant in sending chicks via the mail, whether that be UPS, FedEx, or whatever they use. I think they were told they had to shut that down here soon.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the big threats that we have, is that if you look, you actually take a step back and look at most of American business, it's a combination of micro businesses, right? In other words, the farmers don't grow everything that they need. They generally focus on one thing and they buy right. what they need from another micro business. And the same with raising chickens. Almost nobody incubates their own chickens now. It's cheaper and less problems just to buy them from an incubation company, mm-hmm. right? There's one in Ohio named like Myers or Mayers. What not many people know is that the chick, when it's hatched, can live for 3 days on the food that its mother had provided. The yolk is actually food for the baby chick. The embryo grows around the yolk. And that they, so you put in an order and they'll say they have it timed so well that in like 2 weeks, they're going to have, let's say 10,000 chicks hatch, and they send them to you one day a delivery. And you have to actually go to the post office and pick up a box of chirping chicks. Again, that micro business, you know, the hatchery, let's see, the closest hatchery to me is about an hour and a half away in Quakertown, New Jersey. I mean, Pennsylvania. And the next one is in Ohio.
It seems to me that would be a good move to get in the incubation of chicks.
Absolutely. I went out and I actually found off Craigslist some antique incubators. That really have no more use. That's when New Jersey was the Garden State. We produced a huge amount of chickens. And that I am able to incubate 2,000 eggs a month.
Wow.
That's a lot of chickens. So what I did was I took an old travel trailer, which doesn't have much value anymore for humans, and I stuffed the incubators in there, and now I can actually pull that incubating unit to any farm. Right? So if you think, if we're going to have a collapse of the food system, what's the number one protein easiest to raise?
Yeah. That's chicken, eggs.
That's the eggs, and of course, how many does one farm need? Well, I think 2,000 would do just fine for one farm.
Well, I was going to say that you can incubate 2,000 eggs, but you have to have 2,000 chickens to make them, or you know, some other derivative of.
No. Actually, if you look at the exponential rise, so if you have, let's say, 100 chickens, mm-hmm. right? Well, let's say 120 chickens will lay 100 eggs in right. one day.
Right.
Now the egg will last generally about 5 days to 7 days. If you keep it at about 50 degrees, it will stay fertile. So if you have 5 days right there, that's 500 eggs. with just 120 chickens.
Yeah, that is good math.
Yeah, that's why they sent me to school.
And the incubate, they didn't send you to school for incubating chicken eggs.
Well, no.
I got to go to a break. We'll be back with more incubation of all things, all ideas with J.C. Cole on Roll Route after this. And right out of the chute today, I want to remind you about Protect the Harvest, enabling you to do a better job standing up for your rights. It's not that we just give you information and say good luck with it, but it's about creating a network and talking to the people that have been there, done that, and giving you the assistance and the information, because so much of this is all about information. What is the right information to stand up for your personal property rights and protect that American experience? That's why it's called Protect the Harvest. Details on the web, protecttheharvest.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside J.C. Cole, as he is every Wednesday, giving us a little incubation math. What is the, is it 21 days? How long does it take to incubate a chicken?
A chicken egg.
Yeah.
Right. Which came first?
Well, at the end of the day, you got a chicken.
Yeah, right. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? The incubator. So, yes, it's 21 days for a chicken egg, and it's 18 days of rotation and then 3 days of letting it sit still. Now, interestingly enough, you can build your own. You can get on YouTube and find out how to build your own incubator for under $20, right? But the key there is to have a thermostat already in your possession.
Right.
That's the thing that you really need. To keep the temperature consistent. And you keep the temperature at 99.5 degrees, as close as you can, plus or minus a few degrees.
So, or you could just use the chicken to incubate your eggs.
That part's true, but I don't want to pick on Mother Nature too much, but they don't do as well as the incubator.
You know, there's a reason they have an egg every day. It's because like half of them don't make it.
Yes. And by the way, if you ever looked at the terminology that we use in our language, a lot of it goes back to chickens, you know, pecking order, right?
Spring chicken.
Right. Spring chicken, your feathers are ruffled. When they're moody, it'll come to me. When they start to sit on the nest. Brooding.
Oh, brooding, yeah.
Right. Yeah, they get really grouchy at that point. You reach your hand in and they peck you, and they make all kinds of noise. Sounds like your wife when you didn't take out the garbage.
Or your mother telling you, Trent, don't be getting cocky out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, I see that that's worked.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mother.
Right. All right. So you want a little bit of the homework?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. January 11th, right? 1838.
That was happened?
Yes, I know. Oh. Yes. What happened in Morristown, New Jersey that changed telecommunications forever?
In 1838?
1838.
Somebody had to string a telegraph wire.
That's it. Right. The first public demonstration Morse code was done in Morristown, New Jersey at Spedwell Iron Works by Samuel Morse.
Hmm. How did Morristown get its name?
I don't know.
Well, a guy named Samuel Morris probably had something to do with it.
close. But and now 200 years later, we are using Maxwell Smart's advanced shoe phone.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you remember that great show, Get Smart. You know, think about it. 1960s, he's using a shoe phone. Right.
He's before my time, you know.
You didn't have to rub that in. Great. So, okay, here's another good one. January the 12th, 1906. What happens on the Dow Jones Industrials? I know, it's a little on the business side.
1906?
1906, Dow Jones Industrials.
Roosevelt would have been president, right?
Which one?
Theodore.
Yeah. Okay, the Dow Jones closed for the first time above 100.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so today, or actually yesterday, I looked it up. The Dow Jones is at 36,252. So I did a little bit of math again. 116 years, and the Dow Jones had a 3,600% increase. Doesn't that sound a little bit strange? Something wrong there?
Sounds like a lot.
Yeah, sounds like something's overvalued to me. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to start any rumors. But, you know, how is it that the Dow Jones in only basically 120 years increased 3,600%? All right.
You have an answer?
Well, I call it hyperinflation and manipulation, but that's just me.
Not to be starting rumors.
No, not at all. Okay. And of course, January the 13th, tomorrow, is Russian New Year.
I did not know that. I think you told me that last week, but it didn't resonate.
Right, right. So their New Year starts tomorrow. So if you know any Russians, say Smolomom Goldom.
And why is it tomorrow?
Well, they're going on the Julian calendar, and we're going on the Gregorian calendar.
Okay.
And there's going to be a question that comes up. Why is it that the Gregorian calendar got changed and we lost 10 days? Something suspicious, but that's a few hundred years ago.
And then China's New Year is later this month, right?
Right. Chinese New Year's is February the 1st, and it is the Chinese Year of the Tiger.
Oh.
So what's the new... So what's the new... The new meaning for NATO, you know, the old one was North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The new one is not aware tigers are outraged.
Yeah, no right. Doubt about that.
Yeah. They're
I think we need a few more tigers. That's what I think.
Oh, man. Yeah, they start pushing Putin any farther, they're going to have an outraged bear. And they're going to regret it. All right. So you know, last week, I kind of get a little worried about this. Every time we bring up a subject, something happens. Last week, we discussed the Great Frost of 1709. And right now, I'm freezing my tootsies off here in New Jersey at 15 degrees.
Above?
Right? Yeah, it's 15 above.
Well, I'm just telling you that this audience is not going to have a lot of sympathy for you at anything on the top side of zero, JC, just so you know.
I understand that. But, you know, I'm a poor guy in New Jersey playing a violin.
Yeah. You know what happened on this day in 1888 in the Great Plains of America, right?
No.
It's called the Schoolhouse Blizzard, where hundreds of children got stranded at school. Many perished. And it's still widely recognized as the worst natural disaster to hit the Great Plains of America in modern time.
Wow.
And in fact, led to all of the whole collection of the Charlie Russell paintings. Those cattle that are poor and dying are a direct result of what happened in the blizzard of 87, 88.
Yeah. You know, this brings up this issue that we have entered into a solar minimum called the Eddy minimum, and we are going to continue to increase in severe weather changes, both hot and cold. And in Pakistan this week, they got nailed with a snowstorm. Over 1,000 cars got stuck in the snowstorm, and 22 people died just from hypothermia.
Wow. Yeah. Weren't there cars stuck on Interstate 95 in Virginia for 12 hours this week too?
Yeah. And that brings up an interesting thing and a very important thing for us is you need in your car, like a get home bag or a bag prepared in case something like that happens. You know, just a few, you know, thermal blankets and a good pair of walking shoes and a few other things and you'll do fine. But and it also brings up a question. If you had one of those electric vehicles and you were stuck, yeah. How long do you think your battery would last?
You don't know how many memes I saw with that particular concept, which is probably the only reason I even saw the pictures of the stranded vehicles. But we have to take a break. We're halfway through. It's J.C. Cole on another Roll Route. Back with more after this. And now we talk about immune health. We talk about health in general. The world's authority on nitric oxide production, Dr. Nathan Bryan, explains.
We've got about 14 COVID clinics around the U.S. where we have a nitric oxide drug trial going on. I'm exposed to COVID probably every day. You know, pre-COVID, we as humans are exposed to viruses and bacteria every day of our life. That's just the world we live in. Some people get sick, some people don't. Why do some people get sick and why do others not? It all boils down to their ability to generate nitric oxide and to have certain things replete in their body like vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, selenium. If you're nutrient deficient, you're going to get sick. If you can't make nitric oxide, you're going to get sick. If you do all these things, you can be exposed to COVID or any other virus, and your immune system nips it in the bud, and you don't get sick from it. It's really that simple.
We're going to change this ordering process up to make it simpler. Go to loosetailsmedia.com. Loosetailsmedia.com. There will be an order mechanism there, and if you want more of the science, I'll get that to you from Dr. Nathan Bryan. Loosetailsmedia.com. It's N-O-2-U. The product's the same. The place you get it is different. Welcome back. Rural Route, Trent Lewis, alongside J.C. Cole. He left something out of your emergency kit in your car. Blankets, shoes, and Team Loose pork sticks. They survive until you need them, and then you can munch on them, and you'll have nutrition. There you go.
There you go. There you go.
Because you can have all the incubating chickens you want in your little emergency kit, but you can't fry an egg. You can eat a pork stick. Just saying.
That's a good idea. I put them in a metal container because I think mice like pork sticks too.
Right. Why do you have mice in your car? Too many pork sticks.
Right. I actually had mice one time. I didn't drive my car for a while, one of my cars, and I had a mouse nest in the glove box. Yeah.
Yeah. It happens.
Right. And of course, if they chew your wires, you're going to be very upset. Right. So, you know, last week I wrote you an email, and I saw you kind of brought it up with Andrew, that, you know, there's a bird flu epidemic going on. And as you know, we've been discussing that there's an attack. There's an attack on our food supply, and that I'd be concerned that they go after all the main livestock, the meats. So basically chicken, you know, cow and pig, right? So last week there was an article, UK apocalyptic bird flu jumps to humans, although nobody seemed to prove that, but they did just go in and cull the birds. And of course, how could you identify whether they had the flu or not, right? But yesterday, right, Bloomberg put in a highly transmissible and fatal disease for pigs known as African swine fever continues to spread throughout Europe, leading some to believe the major outbreak could be nearing and may result in soaring pork prices. So that was yesterday, where all of a sudden swine flu pops up. And then today, early in this morning, Bloomberg, mad cow disease drives Asian nations to halt Canadian beef imports. So my kind of apocalyptic email to you has just arose where
Well, adding to that, in the last 30 days, Brazil now admits they had a case of bovine spongiform encephalopathy that they didn't come clean on, and they were still exporting products, particularly to China. And I am going to sadly tell you, J.C. Cole, that anybody who's talked to me in the pig world in the last 3 months, I've told them, and I don't want to be a Nostradamus in this regard, I just see it clearly happening, that African swine fever will make its way to U.S. land, and the USDA will be responsible for bringing it here because they want to create that chaos.
Yeah. And so I have this question. I know a bit about, healing that has been outlawed in America, for certain diseases. And I think that somebody aware of that needs to start looking at animals, because if you can heal a disease like like COVID or smallpox using a Rife machine or electronics, then you should be able to do it for animals. And if they're going to go after the animals and knock out the food, there's clearly a push from the United Nations to get rid of meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody can argue that.
Right. And so I don't trust these guys. I think that they would let loose some of the diseases. So it's almost like this is coming. Let's prepare for it and see how we can battle it. You know, for instance, I don't have an answer from any of the chicken experts. Does bird flu actually affect the egg? Because I would think that it probably
it does
wouldn't.
Not. It does
so
not.
if you always have eggs in incubation, right, and they come and take your flock, right, you still have eggs in incubation that you can quickly regenerate it.
So you're bringing up something that 2 years ago, before everybody got obsessed with COVID, we were obsessed with African swine fever in my world because it had killed 50% of the population of the pig population in China. And then it migrated to Europe, which you just referenced. And this was a discussion that I always brought up with my veterinarian friends who are doing a great job in educating people. I'd say they'd tell me African swine fever is deadly. If a pig gets it, it's so contagious, it's going to die like this. Well, how are pigs contracting African swine fever in those European countries you speak of? And those are Eastern Bloc European countries, Germany and over that way. It's being transported by wild feral pigs. And so I asked the question, I say, well, wait a minute. If this disease is so deadly and so contagious that once a pig gets it, they die, why are those feral pigs transferring the disease instead of dying? Well, clearly there are some that have a natural immunity. I'm like, wouldn't that be the focus of what we should be talking about here? Why are these pigs establishing natural immunity?
Natural immunity doesn't exist. Well, yeah. According to, yeah.
No, I know what you're saying, but therein lies the problem. We have known that there are certain pigs that are not affected by this. Well, why aren't we? And they say, well, I think there are some stuff. Well, I don't think there should be some studies. We should have this happening at Plum Island right now. Oh, wait, we had to shut that down too.
No, we had to shut it down and move it. I think it's, in the center of Kansas now?
It's in Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah, what a great place to put
right
your
in the middle of the livestock population.
Yeah, right in the middle of your food production area.
Right.
They probably could have picked the worst location if they tried, but I'm not really sure if they really put that much effort in.
Sioux County, Iowa would have been a worse location because Sioux County, Iowa is number one in Iowa for pig production counties. Number one in county for pig production, number one county for beef, cattle, feed, and production, number one county for dairy production, and number one county for egg layers. There you go. That would have been a better place.
Yeah. Well, don't give them any good ideas. You know, they might, you know, set up a branch. But, you know, this comes back to Plum Island, and Plum Island is right off of it's in the Long Island sound right off of Lyme, Connecticut. And where did the Lyme's disease start? Lyme, Connecticut.
Really? I did not know that.
And if you actually look at it, and all the way back to, I think, World War I in the trenches, the Germans were coming up with this idea of infecting a tick and with a fatal disease so that it could crawl through in the trenches and affect the enemy's army. So the rumored that during Operation Paperclip, when we brought back so many of the Nazi scientists, we brought back the chemists that were working on a bunch of deadly diseases, including Lyme's disease. And of course, if you look, it's not spelled L-I-M-E. It's spelled after the city in Connecticut. So it looked like it escaped from Plum Island.
Now, that's a bit of history about Plum Island I did not know. I did go to bat pretty seriously trying to keep Plum Island at Plum Island because it's the word island actually means something. And from a biosecurity standpoint, I have a greater degree of confidence. But I was told you can argue all you want. There's no more funding going to Plum Island. It's going to move somewhere.
Right. And so you have to ask the question, why was it that they were moving away from the coast?
Okay, I'm asking you, JC, why did they move away from the coast?
I don't know. I asked you. No. I would say that they know that the coastal areas could be very unsafe.
Oh, well, it is kind of in the middle of the country in my part of the world.
Yeah, but if you remember, if we have any massive tsunami, Plum Island would get wiped out and spread all into Connecticut and New York.
So with that said, and for our Kansas listeners, once they decided that Plum Island, was the research part, the foreign animal disease research part of Plum Island was going to be moving, Kansas went to bat and really won the bid. I mean, there were legislators that worked hard to pull that economic opportunity to the center of cattle country, just so you know.
Do you know what the Darwin Awards are?
What has to be something about not understanding evolution properly?
Well, it's kind of like the awards given to people that are so stupid that they actually somehow kill themselves and remove their genes out of the human gene pool.
Oh, there you go.
Therefore, winning the award.
We call it culling of the herd, survival of the fittest. That's what we call it.
Yeah, I kind of like the sarcasm of Darwin Awards, you know. and there are a bunch that you couldn't believe people would be this stupid, but they are, right?
And I think it was one of Kansas's finer representatives that made that happen. But I can tell you what the thought process would have been. They're going to move it somewhere, so it might as well come here.
Yeah, right. And what can we say? Why don't we just put up a few more nuclear power plants around that too? Make sure we get everything covered.
And Lincoln, Nebraska lost the bid. So I don't know if that was a win or a loss. We have to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment. J.C. Cole on Roll Route after this. Now, as a cattleman, you want to seek the opportunity to get the best pay possible for the quality of beef produced. You do so much in 2 years to produce this beef critter. You think about the cow-calf sector. Everything works against us. We really are at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to pay. Everybody figures out what the animal's going to be worth when the market-ready aspect arrives, and then they trickle down what little they can to the producer. But here's the thing about that. Without the cow-calf producer, we don't have beef. And so ultimately, we need a system that rewards the beef producer at the cow-calf level properly. And that's why we at our family, Kelly and I, are part of the Certified Piedmontese system, because it's all about getting the right reward back to the producer that invests so much time and effort into generating a consistent supply of beef animals. This one's all about the Piedmontese breed and the ability to sire tenderness and quality assistance. Quality assurance, really, what we're talking about. Get details from the website on how you can be a part of the supply chain at lonecreekcattlecode.com. Welcome back. We're all out. Trent Lewis alongside J.C. Cole joining us from New Jersey, not to be confused with Lyme, Connecticut. I did not know that. I got to go research that. I got to learn more about that.
Yeah. And of course, again, there's a lot of misinformation about Lyme's disease, and it's pretty nasty stuff. I think it's very close to meningitis.
I've had friends get it, and it's not something I want to deal with.
No. And of course it's now throughout the Western world. I don't know about third world countries as well, but I know that one of the concentration places in Europe is Stockholm, Sweden.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
So this is another interesting discussion I've had in my horse circles, JC, and that is, I could look it up, but roughly 10 years ago, we had this West Nile epidemic, and it was affecting horse population. If you don't vaccinate your horses, they're going to die. Nobody's even heard of West Nile lately. Where did West Nile go? How come it was an issue?
Yeah. Trent, you're giving them ideas, please.
Yeah, I know. Right. But it was nonstop talk in horse circles. It's kind of like a practice run for COVID is really what it was.
Well, we had, but what not many people know is that the New Jersey is one of the big equestrian states. The U.S. Equestrian Center is here. It's just about 15 miles away in Peapack Gladstone or Far Hills. When that West Nile came down, we almost got locked down here at the farm.
Really?
We know that some of the horses got put into quarantine. Not on our farm, but some of our horses went to a show and they ended up getting put into quarantine. So, you know, again, we have to be aware that these things are going to happen and how to deal with it. And my guess is that there is a way to deal with it, but my guess is also that they're trying to hide that. It's like there were cures for cancer, invented as far back as the 1930s, and they were driven out of the country because of, again, the Rockefellers, creating a monopoly on big pharma. You know, surprise, surprise. Now look what's happening.
Did I tell you that I have stopped vaccinations on all pigs?
No, you didn't tell me.
6 months ago, I stopped. Looks fantastic, by the way.
Yeah. And I think what happens is this is part of the unveiling, you might say.
Yep.
That, you know, we're pulling back the curtain, seeing what the wizard has been doing for the last couple of hundred years. And it's atrocious. The manipulation. And of course, that leads into terrible things like pedophilia and child sacrifice. Those families are getting exposed. You know, Robert David Steele left a great legacy where he funded 5 books that are exposing the names of all of those families that have been basically torturing humans for hundreds of years.
I still can't get my mind around how big apparently that business is. I can't come to grasp with. So, I mean, once in a while you can see, we had a professor at the University of Austin in Texas who actually said that it is time to get back to pedophilia, not the word he used. He used the word using kids as our sexual objects as the Romans did. It's only a matter of nature. What kind of a nature freak? There's a Darwinism I'd like to be a part of fixing right there.
Hey, got to watch that. You don't want the calls from the guys.
You know, he can call me again if he likes, but it's time to do some, it's time to stand up to these people who just don't understand respecting human life and particularly kids.
Well, that's exactly what this battle is. And I can't prove it, but I heard that it's going back 6,000 years. Something happened and there is this group of bloodlines that think that they own the earth and that they can basically kill humans at their will. right? And then it's time that, you know, humanity is starting to step up, and that makes a great reason for them to release a fake pandemic and lock us down.
6,000 years, JC, that was a while ago.
That was a tad.
That was a couple earthquakes and blizzards ago.
Yes, yes. I think I was just getting out of high school.
700 BC, this has been my topic of the week because I really like this topic. And you probably have insights in this that I have not thought about. But I was coming home from watering. My cows are about 20 miles from my house right now. And there's a stock tank in the middle of the pasture that they're in, which needs to be chopped every single day when it's frozen. And so I get over there to spend time with my cows. And coming home along the Middle Loop River, the wind chill is like 22 below on Friday. And here's 1,000 geese laying out there on the ice. And I'm thinking, what kind of an engine do these things have? Well, it turns out that 700 BC, goose meat and pig meat were parallel because they were the easiest fat to acquire, and the health benefits of goose fat is parallel to that of pork, although goose fat is better than lard. But just think about how those geese handle the environment and the amount of natural fat that they have, and how we've moved away from that. 700 years BC, they knew it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of food. Stock that we don't use, such as I hate to say it, especially on an equestrian farm, horse. They ate horse. I think they still do in Europe. I mean, I've had it as a cold cut in Europe. The other one is rabbit. You know, it's rabbits are one of the easiest animals to raise. They are very lean meat. They don't make a lot of noise, and they breed like rabbits.
Yeah, well, you know? Despite them being lean, they're good anyway.
Yeah, and so if you look at it, we kind of, our food system has been controlled and narrowed down to certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
We have someplace down the road, about a couple of miles away, we have a guy raising it's the cow from yak. There it is.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Raising yak. A lot of jokes on that, but apparently yak meat's really good, and they process the grass at a much better rate than the average cow. But that's just what I heard.
Well, no, aren't they? They're native to very cold climates, just like a goose, right? And they have the ability to convert cellulose material grass into fat to protect them, and they have a bit of hair.
Yes, and they're about half the size of a cow, so you don't have to wrestle 2,000 pounds, or you only have to wrestle 1,000.
Well, that's part of the environment that they grow up in, because they're native to, not grew up in. Because the feedstuff, I mean, those animals are just, they adapt to their environment. One of the most interesting things that I've ever done in my life, JC, is I got a phone call from a guy in Alaska in about 1999. And he was in charge of removing these wild cattle from Sherkov Island, south of the Aleutian Chains. And I went up there twice. I went up there to see how we could capture these roughly, I estimated, 1,500 head and move them. And they'd been on this island, Sherkov, since the Russians put them there in the 1850s. And they completely just adapted to their climate and living on this island. And it was the most, two times I've started writing a book about that. And I have like two or three chapters. At one point in time, I just need to, I will.
The word is must.
Must. But because of, I didn't necessarily discover them, but because of my giving publicity to these cattle that had existed on their own, the USDA at Fort Keogh in Miles City actually did go capture some DNA from those cattle and implant and cross them with cattle, domesticated cattle that we have today in Montana. But to me, that study of that evolution within a species, nothing's more interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But while we're on the food issues, because it looks like we're going to have a real attack. We are having an attack on our food supply, and that the preppers have come up with five livestock that you want. Okay. And the reason why is that they can exponentially multiply very quickly. One is chickens. Okay. Two are ducks, specifically the khaki Campbell. Three are rabbits. And of course they breed like rabbits. And four is milking goats, more specifically the dwarf Nigerian goat. They're smaller, they're 50 pounds, easier to handle, and they generally give two offspring probably twice a year, approximately. And of course, the last is pig, swines, you know, because your litter, you get about 10. By the way, didn't you just have a litter?
Had a litter of 10 yesterday.
Yeah. See, there we go. And twice a year. So if you, and let's say half of them are male pigs, boars, and the other half are the females. And so at the end of the year, you'd have now 11 female pigs. And they, if they each give off 20, offspring, you can see it exponentially grows. So, and of course, you know, how long does it take for a pig to be ready for the food line? What is it, about 6 months?
6 months is a good number.
Yeah, and so that's exponential growth, because if all of a sudden the supply chains drop, right, you're going to have to recreate it in micro supply chains around your regions, which is what our discussions have been, you know, this
absolutely
whole time.
Yep.
Yeah. And those are the ones.
And that litter of pigs that I had, litter of 10, was sired by what boar, JC?
Blue Moon, I think.
Nope. Close. Shoot the Moon.
Yeah. Shoot the Moon?
Shoot the Moon. Blue Moon's a different boar. I collected him yesterday, too. We've successfully journeyed down the road. And he was named in a month that there were two moons, believe it or not. Sired by Harvest Moon. That's all the moon talk for today. We've successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. J.C. Cole and myself both remind you, all roads do lead to a rural route. And I think today's the day that we are getting it all set up. We will have Patriots.us, a new payment platform that does not censor you, and it's all going to be tied at loosetails.com. Loosetailsmedia.com. Check it out later today.